You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the weekend edition of the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. Today's podcast features all the best segments from this week's slate of Undisputed. With in-depth interviews and discussions, we have a lot to talk about heading into next week. Skip, Shannon, let's get to it.
After signing former MVP Cam Newton, New England became just the sixth team in NFL history to add a former MVP quarterback to its roster after having made the playoffs the prior season. And here's some good news for Pat fans. All five of the previous teams went on to make the postseason the following year. So, Shannon, is Cam going to make it 6-6?
I believe it'd be 6-6. Betting 1,000.
Really?
Yeah, the AFC East.
You don't sound real confident.
I sound very confident. Skip, I believe the expectations, because I believe Buffalo, what they did last year, Skip, nothing was expected. Now everybody's actually thinking that Buffalo should and could win the division. That's a lot of expectation. Do I take Josh Allen? Do I take Cam Newton? I'll take Cam. Do I want Fitzmagic at Miami, or do I want Cam? Yeah, I take Cam.
What about Tua?
That might be a different story. But Tua not going to start the season.
You don't know that.
I do know that. I feel very comfortable in saying that. And plus, the one thing, we always keep that big joker, Coach Hoodie, old Belichick. Mm. Don't you believe in him more than all the other coaches? Absolutely. Skip, like I
said. I don't know that chip off his block down in Miami. I think he's starting to get things going.
We made him. We created him. Mm.
Well, he got you in the last regular season game.
We knocked
you right out of the two seed.
Skip, did we create Tom Brady? Coach Belichick says, I created that. If I created that one, I can make another one.
I think Brady created Belichick.
Skip, if we go back to look at Cam. Cam last season, the first half of 2018, Skip, they were 6-2. He had 19 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. They were averaging over 27 points a game. Mm-hmm. And then the shoulder happened. And he was never the same after that. And he hadn't been the same after that. I believe Cam has been played through injuries over the last several years, mm-hmm, with the shoulder, with the foot. And now I believe if Cam is healthy, they're winning this division. They're the better coach. They have the better quarterback. Now, do they necessarily have the better talent from top to bottom? Nah, I'm not going to say that. Mm. But I believe in Cam. I believe in Coach Belichick more than I believe in any other quarterback coach combination in that division. Mm. And with that being said, they're going to still be top 10. Skip, they got last 13 or 14 years, top 10 scoring defense. Number one in scoring D and total D last year. Mm. I know they lost Kyle Van Noy. They traded De'Ron Harmon. Mm-hmm. They lost Jamie Collins.
Alandon Roberts. Shelton.
But we did.
They lost them all, and I'm not sure who they added.
We added Josh Uche. We added Anfernee Jennings from Alabama. Oof. And we took a second round DB, a safety, Kyle Duggar.
Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be something. He's a specimen, man.
Not that Duggar family that's mm-hmm. that's down in Arkansas that got those 19 kids.
I got it.
Not them.
Okay. So, I have bad news for you and for Cam Newton. This streak is about to come to an end of 5 straight, and it would be 6 straight MVPs going to the playoffs when they join a new team.
Uh-huh. Who was the last team to do it?
The last team to do it was the 2012 Broncos. Mm-hmm. And what had happened in 2011?
Well, I don't know what happened.
What had happened in 2011?
I'm about to ask you that.
I'm about to get to that, but here's the point. This will not be Cam's fault. It will be Belichick's fault, because the cupboard is getting very bare in New England. It just has. And I don't know why, except I think he's trying to prove his genius by saying, I'm not even going to try hard to make my team a lot better than it was last year. I'm just going to do a little of this and a little of that and a whole lot of me. This is about me, and I'm going to show you I am the genius, and I was responsible for the 9 Super Bowls and the 6 victories, not that quarterback who's now in Tampa. Mm-hmm. So to do that, he needs to undercut even himself. He needs to not try hard to go out and make free agent splashes because he didn't make any.
Yeah.
He had a Demir Bird.
I want to know where the money at. Where the money go?
I don't know. That's a very good question. Although he has dead cap money. I believe it's 11 or 12 million that's Brady money.
Yeah.
Okay? So that hurt some. But here's the point about Cam Newton. Number one, are we sure he's going to be the starting quarterback? We're not dead positive about that.
Yeah, and then at what point in time, I mean, he's the starting quarterback, you know, with 5-6 games left.
Okay. Or
out of the playoffs.
We've talked about this. Will he just have Cam packages, 10, 12 plays a game that he will run the way he runs them and that Stid, as Belichick calls him, Jared Stidham, will be the starting quarterback as in, and then he starts the game and finishes the game, that he'll play a majority of the snaps. Is that possible? Because by all accounts, Belichick still loves Jared Stidham. Did he acquire Cam on the cheap for only about $1 million base salary, only $550,000 guaranteed, just to sort of supplement what Stidham does as a first-year starter?
Yeah, well, Skip, anytime you get out of a long-term relationship, the first person you meet, you think you really love them. That's what normally happens. When you have been in a relationship for a long period of time, this is what I've been missing.
It's called rebounding.
Yeah! Yep. Mm-hmm. So Jared Stidham just happened to be Coach Belichick and Brady was married for 20 years, and he happened to be the first thing to come up after Brady left. So obviously, Coach Belichick thinks that's his boo. But, Cam Newton.
You think Cam is his new boo.
Cam is. Yeah.
All right, well, that's possible. So here's what's incredible about this statistic. Cam Newton is by far the youngest MVP ever to change teams.
Yeah.
He just turned 31 on May the 11th.
Yeah.
Just 31.
Right.
Well, that's because he won the MVP when he was only 26 years old. Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty great, right?
Yeah.
And Cam by far has played the fewest games of any of the MVPs to change teams because he's that much younger.
Right.
The next up the list on age, it goes from 31 Cam. The next is 35, Kenny Stabler, who went from, as you know, Oakland to the Oilers. Okay, he was 35. Then let's go 36, Peyton Manning. Then let's go 37, Joe Montana. Then let's go 38, Earl Morrill went to the Dolphins from Baltimore. And then how about let's go 40, Brett Favre. Of course, he had done 1 year with the Jets, but he went Green Bay Jets. And then at age 40, went to Minnesota.
Right.
Okay, so look how much older the 5 previous MVPs were than Cam.
Right.
And how much fresher Cam is than those.
Because they had played so many more
that's
years.
That's what I'm saying. But like Brett Favre had played 295 games at that point when he joined the Vikings, and Cam's played 132 games.
Right.
It's more than doubled the other way. So I averaged the number of games that the 5 previous MVPs had played is 209 games to Cam's 132.
Right.
And the Cam's age is 31. The average age of the other MVPs is 37.
Yeah.
So they're older guys on their last hurrah, their last stop.
Right.
Okay? Now let's look at their circumstances, shall we?
Right.
Let's go back to the first one, 1972, Earl Morrill. He'd been the MVP back in 68, okay, for Baltimore. He joined a team that had lost to my Cowboys in the previous Super Bowl. So do you have a pretty good shot?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what you did? You helped them go undefeated. Bob Greasy got hurt after 5 games, but then he came back in the playoffs.
Right.
But you played a big chunk of games, mm-hmm. and you were really good for them. Let's look at Kenny Stabler. What had he done? What had the Oilers done the year before? They were 11-5, and they got to the AFC Championship game in that Mike Renfro controversy game at Pittsburgh, in which he tiptoed across the back line and clearly caught it. It brought in, it detonated the cry for instant replay.
Yeah.
Okay, so they had been within a controversial throw of getting to the previous Super Bowl.
Correct.
Okay, so you're pretty great, right? Okay. Then let's look at Joe Montana. The Chiefs the year before had been 10-6. They had lost in a wild card game to the Chargers, 17-0. So they weren't great. They had Dave Craig at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But still, they were 10-6. So you're inheriting a pretty good team.
Right.
Brett Favre's Vikings had been 10-6 with Gus Frerotte at quarterback, mm-hmm. lost in a wild card game to the Eagles. But you were already
yeah.
okay. Then let's look at Peyton Manning. Tim Tebow had come out of nowhere at 1-4. That team was dead in the water with Kyle Orton at quarterback. Am I right? And he took it to the division title. They won the AFC West, and they beat Ben Roethlisberger in a home playoff game and advanced all the way to the division round. They got their clocks
ramshackle.
Yeah, they got bum-rushed up in New England.
Yes.
But that was Tom Brady and company.
Well, they
did a number. They put them right back in their place. But Tebow was sensational that year. There were the makings. There was a good defense that got a lot better as the year started to go on. I will give you that. But at least the seeds were planted of, hey, we can do this.
And look how much better that defense got when they wasn't playing 100 snaps a game because you kept going 3 and out.
You can argue, but they had made the playoffs. So it's not like any of the 5 previous former MVPs had taken over a lousy football team.
Right.
Okay,
are you trying to say the Patriots are lousy?
I think they're below average. We just talked about the defense, and I'm going to remind you, that defense that you said was on a historical pace for the first 8 games of the year,
yeah,
on a fateful Sunday night at midseason, it went to Baltimore and ran into the, on the way to the MVP, Lamar Jackson, right?
Yes.
And the score was a wipeout. It was, 37-20, I believe, that night?
Jerry Stidham must have started that game.
Okay, 37-20 that night. And from that point on, that team fell to 10th in points allowed in the NFL, which is not terrible.
Right.
But it wasn't the same. It wasn't a dominating defense. And it went all the way to the bitter end when it had the 2 seed in its lap, thanks to Tom Brady, because he had driven 60 yards for a touchdown that put them ahead with 3 minutes left, 24-20. So all you have to do is hold them out of the end zone. They can kick a field goal because it won't matter.
No.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick, against what was left of that defense that had gotten exposed over the last 8 games, drove his team 75 yards. I want people to let this sink in. 75 yards in 13 plays against Bill Belichick's defense in Foxborough with the 2 seed on the table. It's yours. All you have to do is keep Fitz magic out of your end zone.
We'll skip it.
And guess what? On the last play of the game, he hits Mike Gesicki, 5-yard touchdown pass, and they lose 27-24, and they lost the 2 seed.
Well, Skip, it's easier when you know you have what you have to have. It's not a situation, and that's why you notice, Skip, when team, let's just say in overtime, the sudden team that scores the touchdown win. So I go down and I kick a field goal. Well, the team already automatically knows. Mm-hmm. They keep going for it on 4th down. They keep going for it. They keep going for it. But see, Skip, the way I look at it, I look at it like this. Good cooks. You know, Skip, I'm growing up as a young boy. I remember going and looking in the kitchen. I'm like, Granny, we ain't got nothing to eat. Ain't nothing in here. Flour, lard, some syrup, and butter. Hey, my grandma getting that kitchen.
That's
water,
pretty good to me.
Flour bread. Me and my brother eating flour bread for days. You see what I'm saying, Skip Bayless?
Syrup?
Yeah. So you look at the kitchen as being bare, the cupboard as being bare.
Mm.
But old Coach Belichick being the great James Beard winner, he's been for like 3 years in a row making something out of nothing. Whipped up a good old dish. Go whip it up in 2022.
Okay, well, he better because he's got nothing but, bread and water in the kitchen? He's got bread and water. He's got to make a meal out of bread and water.
Well, he got bread and he got a wish sandwich. So, wish he had some meat in between it.
So his receivers right now are the immortal Julian Edelman, who came all apart last year, had shoulder surgery, led the league in drops at age 34. Looked like he kind of hit the physical wall because he is a physical possession receiver. And what he does, the routes that he runs, the underneath routes, which require pinpoint accuracy, is not Cam's cup of tea. It's not what he did the best. He can throw it mid-range and deep balls. He can just cook you, so to speak, if we're talking about cooking.
Yeah.
But the point is that that's his best receiver. And I guess Mohamed Sanu had ankle surgery, so maybe he'll bounce back. But he sure didn't look like Mohamed Sanu last year.
Hold on. Time out. The guy that's been campaigning, Skip Bayless has been campaigning for Julian Edelman to get into the Hall of Fame the last 4 years, and now all of a sudden, what?
He hit the wall. I say what I see. I did not see that guy last year. I saw him building up to the Rams Super Bowl that they won in the 4th quarter
MVP.
Thanks to Tom Brady's game-winning drive.
MVP!
Okay. Well, he was. And then what happened? He hit the physical wall. It happens when you take that much contact and you turn age 34. So that's your best option right now. And so, again, Damier Bird from the Cardinals and Marquise Lee from Jacksonville, are they going to change your life?
So,
I don't think so.
So you're saying the Patriots are not going to make the playoffs?
I think Buffalo is just clearly better, and I think Miami is on the rise, and I think the Jets will take their pound of flesh in that division thanks to their defense and their defensive coordinator.
Well, you do know they got the extra playoff game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that team, you mean extra playoff team?
You got an extra playoff. Yeah, extra playoff. Okay. A team's going
to
make it.
Yeah, I didn't even get to the tight ends. They had the worst productivity in the league last year, and they lost Benjamin Watson because he was 39 and he retired.
Did they draft two tight ends?
They drafted two, and one of them named, let me look at his name here, Dalton Keene. He's trying to explain to me that he's the next Rob Gronkowski. So, young man, come on down.
The one from Vontae?
Yeah, yeah. That's what he says. He's mad at me because I didn't even say his name. So, Dalton Keene, you are the next Rob Gronkowski, and good luck to you, and good luck to Cam Newton.
Why just can't be a good, solid tight end? Why he has to go all the way to the end of the... I don't know.
I don't know, but he's going to be competing with the immortal Matt LaCoste, or there's Ryan Izzo. They're two of the all-timers. That's what's left in your cupboard at tight end. And I told you, I feel sorry for Cam Newton because I think they're going to play a lot of close games, and guess whose foot it will come down to? A fifth-round pick named Rohrwasser. That's who's going to be kicked. They cut Belichick cut Gostkowski, okay, and he drafted in the fifth round out of Marshall Rohrwasser, Justin Rohrwasser. Remember the name because he's going to sink or swim, man.
I'll never forget the name, the one that had the tattoo on his body that he didn't know what it represented.
You know, is that guy?
Yeah, that's
him. That's him.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that's him.
That's a good point.
He had a tattoo, didn't even know what it was.
So he's off to a great start in New England, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, that's the guy that he could make or break Cam Newton next year.
But don't worry about it. You remember the show, TV show MacGyver?
Yeah, do I?
Coach Belichick, watch how he make that thing work.
Yeah.
Watch how he make it work.
He's got all that. He can make anything.
Watch him.
Hmm.
Then you're going to come in here every week. Why wouldn't he do that with Coach Belichick? I mean, or Tom Brady? Why wouldn't the defense do a goal line stand for Tom Brady? They did one. Remember, he won the Super Bowl because the defense bowled his back.
I will end this discussion by reminding you, the New England Patriots play the toughest schedule in the National Football League next year, and you and your man Cam are going to be in trouble. You have bet a lot of diet due now on Cam Newton, or mostly on Coach Belichick, against the toughest schedule in the league. Good luck with that.
No mercy.
President Donald Trump sent a series of tweets to Bubba Wallace yesterday, arguing that NASCAR's only black driver should have apologized over a report of a noose found in his garage stall last month, calling it a hoax and questioning NASCAR's decision to ban the Confederate flag from the sport. But Wallace took the high road, and in a tweet addressed to, quote, the next generation and little ones, Wallace wrote, quote, even when it's hate from the POTUS, love wins. Now, Reggie Bush is still with us. Reggie, what do you make of this?
Well, I think what I saw from NASCAR and Bubba Wallace and that picture you guys just showed us, I saw unity. And I saw NASCAR coming together to support somebody in a situation that they thought to be true. And whether it was or wasn't true, I don't think that's on Bubba Wallace. I think that's on NASCAR for, you know, putting it out there to the world so quickly, right? And not maybe trying to handle it internally or wherever it is, whatever it was, however it got out. But what I did love that I saw was Bubba Wallace being supported by all the other NASCAR drivers, because that is something that we need to see more of, because we didn't forget about Kyle Larson and what he just said to the black whoever he was talking to when he used the racial slur on the simulator race. We didn't forget about that. Okay, so we can't act like these things are not a part of this sport. This has been this way for a long time. African Americans, people of color, have been treated a certain way by this sport for a long time, and I'm so glad to see Bubba Wallace see a black NASCAR driver in the sport, because we need more of that. You know, one of the things I would love to see NASCAR do is go to the inner cities and create programs for inner city youth, for minorities to become NASCAR drivers. There are so many talented young kids out there that never got a chance to become a NASCAR driver because they didn't know anything about it. They didn't know that they could be that. And so what Bubba Wallace is doing, that he's inspiring people. He's inspiring the youth. When I saw him wear the Black Lives Matter on his car, man, that made me so proud, because that's something we've never seen. We've never seen that kind of support for the African-American community from NASCAR. And so to me, this is about that. I don't want to focus on Trump, because I believe that he's going to continue to say divisive things. He's going to continue to make himself look like a fool. So just let him keep talking, right? I think, again, Bubba Wallace, he does not owe anybody apology. It was not him that went out and you know, created this. He was just a product of a situation that happened. It was very unfortunate, but I love seeing all the drivers walking behind him in a sign of unity and saying that, you know what, little bro, we got you, because that's the only thing that matters, right? When I'm on the football field, the only thing that matters to me is my teammates. And that's the same thing that should matter to Bubba Wallace. It's his teammates supporting him.
Reggie, let me ask you a question. Did you see the picture of what was hanging in Bubba Wallace's garage? What would you call
that? Yes. That's a noose. That ain't a rope. It's very simple.
The FBI identified it as a noose, although they also concluded that it was not put there for hateful or intimidation purposes. It was a noose. So therefore, his complete story about this was a hoax is a lie.
Yeah.
Skip, think about what he said, Skip. Think about what he said, and I want people to understand. He said you should apologize to the people that supported you, the good people that supported you. Now, President Trump only thinks one people in America is good. That's white people.
Yep.
He's never said anything. There's good people in Charlottesville. There were good people on both sides. When those people went to Michigan and they went to the state capitol with those guns, those are good people. The governor should listen. You see what he did? Bubba, you should apologize to those white people that supported you. Really? When are you going to apologize to the Central Park Five? We now refer to them as the Exonerated Five. 1989, Skip, you remember. Even though the DNA evidence came back, said they had nothing to do with this, he still won't apologize. But he wants Bubba Wallace to apologize for saying, there was a noose in my garage. My team alerted me that there was a noose in my garage. We didn't know why it was there. We just knew it was that it was there. The FBI concluded, yes, this was a noose, but it was not put there for the purposes of what you might have thought. What's the hoax? Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, I'm trying to make. I still don't get what the hoax was. Okay, people say when NASCAR jumped the gun, well, you can understand why. Think about what had happened. They had just done away with the Confederate flag. Said the Confederate flag is no longer welcome at our racetracks. We will not allow them to fly at our racetrack. Now, Confederate flag, defund NASCAR, flying over. The people are going crazy around the building with the NASCAR, with the Confederate flag. And Bubba Wallace finds a noose, a mechanic finds a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage. How do you think NASCAR was going to react? They reacted, I believe, the way any other organization would have reacted.
Yeah.
I can assure you, if somebody were to hang a noose, if they were to find a noose at Fox, Fox is going to react a certain type of way. That's just the way. Yeah. Especially if there's a noose hanging in front of my door, they're supposed to say, oh, Shadow, that ain't nothing going in there. That ain't going to happen because Shadow going to act
on me. Right. this is my question. Did anybody else have that same noose in their locker? That's all I want to know. If anybody else, all the race car drivers had it in their locker, then okay. But if everybody else didn't have that, then it's a problem.
Okay, my turn. Number one, this was not a hoax because the FBI concluded it was not a hoax. The FBI concluded that noose had been hanging in that garage stall since last October. So it was not planted by Bubba Wallace or anyone on his team.
Correct.
It was already there before they got there, and it had been there for months before they got there. So Bubba Wallace was still a victim, to me, of a hate crime, even if it was a billion-to-one coincidental hate crime. Because, Reggie, the question I still cannot get answered, and this is answering your question, the FBI did a national search of garage stalls in 29 NASCAR tracks. That included 1,684 garage stalls nationally, and that included 43 at the track in question, Talladega. So help me out. If that noose had been hanging there since last October, how was it in a billion-to-one coincidence that Bubba Wallace got assigned to that garage in which that noose was hanging. And again, as I pointed out the first day I saw it, I expected it to be a tiny sort of hand-sized little baby noose that you could use as a handle to pull down the garage door. Nope. It was a full-fledged, hang-'em-high kind of noose that you could slip around and cinch up against someone's neck. I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time with the billion-to-one coincidence that Bubba got assigned to that stall. Something is missing here in the report. And I do think NASCAR did a good job of being out in front of this. They were transparent. They showed us a picture of the noose.
Right.
But it was first discovered not by Bubba, but by his mechanic named David Crops, who also happens to be African-American, who was also obviously horrified at the sight of a noose as a pull-down rope used in his garage. So according to Bubba, he then did a whole tour of all the garage stalls at Talladega looking for a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth noose. Is this just the way they do it at Talladega? Nope, nope, nope. There were no other nooses. So Bubba owes somebody an apology for what? Bubba is still owed an apology to me by NASCAR or some, not maybe not NASCAR, but Talladega.
Right.
Somebody should have seen that noose over the last few months and said, wait a second, we can't have that hanging in a garage, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I think it's pretty simple, right? We don't have to complicate it. It's a noose. Period. We don't need the FBI to come in here and to tell us. We know what a noose looks like when we see one. We've seen it before. So we don't need the FBI, the DEA, or CIA, or nobody to come and tell us what that was. Black people can see that for themselves, and they can make a determination right away. It don't take 2 seconds.
Yeah, you don't need the FBI for that. I mean, you don't need to go to Quantico and say, well, I need you to come down here, send me some of your best investigators so we can identify and tell us what this is. No, you just look at it and you understand what it is. And for me, I agree with Skip. For 9 months, that's there. And nobody walks by like, you know, man, let me just go ahead and take this down because I don't even want nobody to get the wrong idea that that's how we operate right here. But no, we just bypass it. I mean, people just bypass it like it's nothing. Oh, yeah, and we're going to have the race here this week. And somebody's going to get the stall. Oh, Bubba, you installed four. And people don't think anything right. Look, if you are purposefully and willfully not understanding, there's nothing we can do. That was a noose. Yeah. The FBI identified it as a noose and just said it was not there for the purpose of that, what people thought. I don't really get what the debate is or what the discussion is moving forward. Yeah. And I'm reading Bubba Wallace's timeline, and, oh, you justice. In order for this to be a hoax, and Skip and I talked about this earlier, Bubba or his crew, somebody from his team, needed to place that there in order for this to be a hoax. Well, NASCAR and the FBI said that had been there for 9 months. So that involved Bubba or anybody in his crew from placing it there. Come on, people. Mm-hmm. Come on. Mm-hmm. Mercy.
The resumption of the NBA season is just weeks away, and LeBron James is focused on winning a fourth career championship. We even got the news this week that Dwight Howard will be joining LeBron in Orlando. And according to a Yahoo Sports article, this is LeBron's, quote, last best chance to win a fourth ring in his prime. So, Shannon, is this LeBron's last best chance?
No. Who said it? Because they wrote it, that make it true? No, I disagree. I vehemently disagree. I staunchly disagree. I object. You ought to be ashamed, too, for reading that article, because I know you read it. Yeah, this is the best. No, it's not.
I got a chuckle at it.
Yeah, I know you did. But he ain't slowing down. Mm. And who's to say that we don't make a big blockbuster move this offseason?
You could.
Okay, then.
Yep.
So it
you could have a big three.
Does it look like he's slowing down to you?
Nope.
It doesn't. So guess what? And this is going to be a tough, it's going to be a trying time. They got us down in the bubble. Did you see what they feeding them down there in that bubble? Mm-mm. I told you it was like prison. Troy Daniels showed, man, that thing potluck. My grandma said, I said, Granny, what we eat today? She said, son, it's potluck. I put a bunch of stuff in a pot, you lucky it don't kill you. That's what they feeding them down there. So how you go from having chefs?
I don't think it's potluck.
No. But it's close. Mm. I mean, they feed them like they go into summer camp, bag of chips and a little cup of fruit. You got guys that's making $35, $40 million. They're making $70 million, $80 million total. And chefs preparing 5-course meals 3-4 times a day. And now I got to eat out of Tupperware? They like, when? How?
Trying to keep everybody safe.
Nah, let us say. You can be out looking. I want to be fed. You can be safe or hungry. You can't be, listen, the NBA said, you can't be both. We're going to keep you safe, but you're going to be go to bed hungry. Mm.
He wants to say sleek, right? He needs to keep his...
LeBron know how to do it. We got our chef coming. We one of the few that's going to be allowed to bring our chef into the bubble.
I did not hear that.
Now, don't worry about all that. Okay. See, there you go, Skip Bayless. Yeah. Look, it's going to be difficult. Avery Bradley, one of our starters, is not going to be there. He's a 3-and-D guy. He can play great defense. He normally takes the best of player in certain occasions, except that last time we played the Clippers.
Mm.
I got him.
Mm.
We refused to utter his name.
Mm.
Trade old Benedict Arnold.
Mm.
But that's okay. Your day coming. That day of reckoning is coming, Skip Bayless.
Mm.
All this thing that you said, all the things that you've done to us, him too.
Mm.
That day coming. And this is not our best chance. We got plenty more chances.
I'm going to give you this much. It's probably not his last chance, but it is by far his best chance of his career to go, quote unquote, steal a championship. I told you, we just got finished watching The Last Dance. This is the fast dance to a title, and he is in position eight. The basketball god said, let there be LeBron. He should be prohibitively favored to win this championship, even though he's a co-favorite, his team is, with the Eastern Conference's Milwaukee Bucks. I don't buy the Bucks. I'm sorry, they seem like regular season wonders to me.
Oh, so you don't fear the deer?
I do not fear them in the biggest series, in the biggest moments, when the money's in the push to the middle of the table.
Okay.
What happened against Kawhi Leonard's Toronto Raptors last year? The Bucks actually won the first two games. Then what happened? They lost four straight games. Four straight? And Giannis played like he was about 6 feet, 2 inches tall in those games.
Well, Skip, you saw what they did. They kept the man
out of
the paint.
They walled him off, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at his numbers in those last four games, they're just pathetic.
They are.
The big picture, in the second halves of those four last games, he was minus 27. In the fourth quarter of those four games, he was minus 29. He just shrank. He just shriveled up and disappeared.
Right. Well, you got to keep him out of the paint. In order to beat them, Skip, you got to keep him out of the paint.
All right,
but
fine.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah, I believe this is one of his better chances. Did he have, and when he went to those four finals in Cleveland, was his chances better then or better now?
Way better now.
Okay, then.
Yeah, way better.
Yeah.
Except he did have that first Golden State team down 2-1 with game four in his house.
And we had no home court. And now we got no home court.
Oh, now you got no home court.
We didn't have no home court, no series either.
Well, what are you talking about? Well, all you had to do is win game four in the King's house, and you're up 3-1. You don't think you could have closed that deal?
We didn't get it done.
Okay.
So we ain't got no. We fighting all this.
Yeah, Iggy got it done.
Whatever.
He was the MVP.
We fought very hard, okay, Skip,
so
this season to get home court.
Speaking of the old Cavaliers,
I'm
looking at this Milwaukee roster, and I'm saying, where is their championship experience on this roster? Well, they got two players who played in finals.
Yeah. George Hill.
They got George Hill, infamously known in Cleveland for missing the second free throw. Am I right?
Yeah.
LeBron had the shot, passed it up to George Hill, who missed the second free throw, which led to JR's mental meltdown, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the other player on that team is one Kyle Korver, and LeBron passed up the shot, or at least the drive, to kick it to the corner to Kyle Korver, who missed that shot. So I remember those two players in Cleveland for the wrong reasons, right?
Yeah.
Those are the only two players with finals experience on the Bucks roster. So what am I supposed to think about? Is that a big threat to them? And I told you, the biggest threat is obviously in the West. It's the Clippers. But the Clippers have had their total roster together only 12 times this year. One of those 12 was the loss to the Lakers, the third game.
But if you don't mind me asking, Skip, other than Kawhi, who on the roster on the floor that's been to the finals?
Okay, I got it. Although Kawhi's got two finals.
Has Paul George been to the finals?
No.
Oh, he got a loss. He got an L on that resume too. Mm-hmm. Don't pretend like you don't know that.
I know exactly what he has, and I told you that Kawhi and Paul George only played 32 games together. Your guy and his new co-star from New Orleans played 53 games together. The Clippers needed reps. They needed to finish out on time in sequence the regular season to figure out how to play together to beat that guy when it mattered.
Well, how are they going to do that if Kawhi playing every other day?
Well, now he will play every day.
He ain't got no choice.
You bet?
Got no choice. Well,
okay, but he's fresh. So they got that.
Oh,
but,
so he
but they
break.
Don't. They don't have any experience. He just got 5 months off in year 17.
So did Kawhi.
5 months off. Kawhi's not in year 17.
Kawhi body feel like he in year 20. That's why he missed 20 games right. last year, okay. 11 this year so far.
He needed experience with his new team. And he didn't get it.
And what about that 73 games he had a couple years ago off?
Yeah, well, he did.
73?
Okay. All right. Well, he quit on my Spurs. I've told you that from the start.
And you support
But
him.
He had a master plan in mind, and he executed it brilliantly. Toronto, I think I'll go to Toronto and just win the championship in the finals MVP, and then I will jerk the rug right out from under that man.
No, excuse me. What, no,
I will shock the world.
No, first of all, that was not a master plan. What he did is kind of just the equivalent of me, my car breaking down side the road. I get out to look and see what's wrong with it, and then I see a bag of money in the ditch. That's what happened. Kawhi stumbled upon that plan.
Well, that's his second finals MVP. So I look back at LeBron's competition in the finals. If we go back to 2012, his breakthrough year against the Baby Thunder.
Ain't no baby.
Okay. They were baby, but they were just loaded with potential or future Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
They got KD MVP. And Russ and James Harden, yeah. right? And I look at that team, and they did have Perk, and they did have Tabo, and they did
Serge
have Nick
Ibaka.
Paulson. They had Serge Ibaka. You know, Ibaka. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had Derek Fisher on that team. So it was a legitimate threat in the finals, and they blew out LeBron's team in game one, and then LeBron got a call in game two.
Don't do that. There you go.
Well, he did. He got a call, but that's okay. And then we look at what happened the rest of that series, and LeBron had – he was blessed that series because, remember, in game two, Shane Battier hit 5 threes. That's huge. You don't expect it from Shane Battier.
Why not?
And then game three, Dwayne Rosenshone, he was the star to me of game three. Then game four was the Mario Chalmers game. We're going to talk about Mario a little later in the show. But Mario, remember, he had 12 points in the fourth quarter to save LeBron's bacon. And then game five became the closeout game, shockingly. And Mike Miller hit 7 threes in the game. So, again, it was meant to be. He won the ring. God bless him. Way to go, LeBron. It's about damn time, he said after the
why
game.
Why you do that?
Well, that's what he said.
No, I'm not about what he said. Okay? I'm saying, why do you do that?
I'm showing you that at least they were a legit threat in 2012. All of a sudden, I'm not sure who the legit threat is to his dominance this year. He is prohibitively favored.
No, I'm not going to let you get away with
this. This is the easiest path. This should be a cakewalk in Orlando.
No, I'm not going to let you get away with this. LeBron James is the only guy that has teammates. When they do what they're supposed to do, mm-hmm. or they do what they're asked to do, they save LeBron's bacon. Everybody else has teammates that do it. That's the mark of a great team. Yada, yada, yada. But you, every time LeBron teammates do with it, so he was supposed to go out there and score 150 points and win the game by himself?
If Ray Allen lifts out that shot in the corner, if he lifts it out, LeBron is 2-7 in the finals.
Okay, what if Steve Kerr missed that three? What if Paxson missed that three?
They weren't do or die.
Why would he? Yeah. Hmm? Well, all would have happened.
Jordan would have just figured it out and finished it off.
No,
he'd say, okay, I'll just do it myself.
All I know is that LeBron, Ray Allen did hit a shot. Mm. Kudos. But who took the overtime over?
My team was shot in the heart.
They don't shot in the heart. Wow.
Shot in the heart. Lying dead on the floor.
But
they couldn't even pick themselves up psychologically.
But what about game one? You talk about LeBron James went and he fought in the stands. He wouldn't even sit with his teammates.
Game one at Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he sat about 4 feet away. He said, don't associate me with that bunch over there.
Coronavirus, huh? Social distance.
Oh, was it? He saw it coming. He saw it coming years ago, right? Yep. He's so ahead of the curve. I'm staying away. Okay. No mercy.
Over 50 league executives, coaches, scouts, and players were polled by ESPN to rank their top quarterbacks heading into the 2020 season. Patrick Mahomes came out on top of the list, and down at number 8 was Carson Wentz, followed by Dak Prescott at number 9. So, Shannon, did they get it right?
Oh, stop it. Just stop it, Mitch.
Yeah, we love to use the word on this show. We use this word a lot. We use context, and we use sample size. Mm. Now, Skip says, you know what? When they do this, 20 people and 30 people, mm-hmm. that's a large sample size, right, Shannon? Right, LaShannon Sharp. You know, you love LaShannon. So I just want to make sure I'm hearing you correctly. 50 is a large sample size when you're dealing with coaches, scouts, execs, and players. Would you agree that is a large sample size? That is enough sample size to concur that, you know what? They're pretty accurate.
Maybe.
I told you walking to him was Mexican. I just been...
Oh, so he's one slot better.
No. I kept telling you this. I've been trying to, I've been preaching this to you for 4 years. And finally, Skip is like, it's validation for me. It's validation. It's like, you know, you try to get something published. And after all, everybody told you, no, it's not worth anything. I don't want to read. Nobody wants to read this. And you get the people that say, you know what? I think you own to something. Let me take a look at that. Mm. Let me just add a look. Boom. And there we go.
Mm.
And one of the things that they said is, what can he do, Skip? He can carry a team. Now, we saw Dak Prescott. No, don't look down. Look at that.
Mm. I didn't see that.
We saw Dak Prescott in 20, what was that? 20, was that 2017, Skip?
Mm-hmm.
When Zeke missed that little bit of time?
Yeah.
And what happened?
6 games, no good.
Now, my guy.
No left tackle.
We had that.
No protection.
We had no right tackle. Lane Johnson was gone. No left tackle. Big Jason Peters was hurt. And our receivers, D-Jack, gone. Alshon, gone. The third guy, gone. Aguilar. Who that was, Skip?
Hmm.
And my guy still brought us home. Y'all had to win one game. You had Dak Prescott, the guy that you wanted to be ranked in front of, walking to him. Had your entire team. Think about it. You had Gallup. You had Coop. You had Zeke. You had a Pollard offensive line that's ranked 3rd in the NFL. You had that and could not win one game.
Mm.
My guy did it.
Mm.
So, Skip, I don't know what you want me to tell you. It's done. I don't want to hear it. We're not arguing. We're not debating this no more. It's over.
Oh, really? It's over. 8-9. It's over. So, I will give you this. Philly beat Dallas in the game, sink or swim, do or die, win or go home.
Yep.
End of year game. I give you that. Dak Prescott had a busted up shoulder. He could not practice all week, and he tried to go because he always goes because he's never missed a game. Unlike your guy, Carson Wentz, who is always beat up, always missing games. In fact, that led to the first playoff start of Carson Wentz's career. And what happened? He lasted 4 passes into the game.
He got speared.
He had completed 1 pass out of 4 for a grand total of 3 yards, and he got concussed, and he was gone again.
Did he get speared?
Yep. But some guys can take it, and some guys can't. Some guys are injury-prone, and some guys, Dak Prescott, are not injury-prone. They're just tough guys. Your guy had to watch Nick Foles win a Super Bowl over Tom Brady with that talent that he had. It was Super Bowl talent. Yeah. It was a very talented team. Well, I don't know. Carson Wentz, would he
have? We might have scored 50 with walking to him.
Yeah, maybe not. He scored 41 without it.
Yeah.
Pretty great. So let's look back at he's getting such run, such play out of the end of the year when he took nobody. And yet Greg Ward Jr. is pretty good.
I want
him on my team. I'll take him. There would have been in that game in Philadelphia. I wish I'd had Greg Ward Jr. instead of Amari Cooper, quit on Dak Prescott again. He was running such half-hearted routes that Jason Garrett, of all vanilla coaches, said, you know what? I've seen enough of that guy. You're out. You come over here and stand by me. He yanked him from the game. And on the final drive of the game, when my man did overthrow Tavon Austin, what could have been the play of the game, could have been the tying play of the game. He missed it. He missed the throw. Bad shoulder and all. But there was no Amari on the field for the whole last drive because he got yanked by the coach. Okay, so that's what my guy was up against. While your guy, this is the last 4 games of the year. He beat the Giants, the lowly Giants. It took overtime. He had a QBR in that game of 32. He was horrible for the first half of that game.
It was raining.
Yeah, he's horrible. Then they go to Washington. They barely win. It ended up 37-27, but they were down 27-24 with 26 seconds left, and he hit Greg Ward Jr. for a big touchdown. Okay, was it great? Was he great in that game?
Yes.
He was decent, but then the Dallas game, he wasn't very good at QBR 64. And then they go up to New York. They get to play the Giants twice in the last 4 games, and he goes up to New York and has a QBR of 40, and they survive.
But, Skip, you've been telling me this whole time, when I tell you Brady wasn't good, you say he was great when he had to be.
Mm.
He wasn't great the entire game against the Rams, but you said that last drive, he goes bing, 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 and they get the touchdown. You say he's great in moments.
Mm.
My guy was great in moments.
Mm.
He He was great when he needed to be. And I'm looking at the article that say Mosley, he was in the range of 7 to 12. Hmm. So he could easily. And what did it say? Evaluated citing inconsistency, ball placement as core issues. And plus, in big games, when they needed to have it, was the Saints a big game? Mm. Yep. Mm. Eagles at the end of the year, was that a big game? Yep. Mm. Was Minnesota a big game? Yes. What about Green Bay? Minnesota. What about New England? Mm.
And what about my man Shannon Sharp saying, pay Dak his money? What about Shannon Sharp saying, give him $40 million? What did you just say? He's not very good.
That is.
He came up small in all these big games. There were 7 games that you were on the road to going down.
But Skip,
you gave him F's for 7 games.
You don't mind me asking, look at all the guys that are there. The contract, they got multiple years on the deal. Mm. Dak is the only one that's had to play his deal out. Here's a guy that's rookie, Skip, the guy coming off his rookie contract, made $2 million for 2 division titles, a playoff win, and a rookie of the year. And all the Cowboys paid him was $2 million. Now, I need back. Skip, we like the IRS. You know the IRS let you go as long as you can, and then they're looking at your bank account like, oh, yeah, now we got him. We can bankrupt him. Dak said, y'all, hey, I let y'all go. Y'all could have did this before. Now I want back pay. So you got to pay what you owe plus interest. Mm. And you know Uncle Sam want his money.
Okay. So nobody has defended, supported Dak Prescott any more than this guy over on this side of this table. And so I got to take great exception to a quote I read in the Dak breakdown.
What did it say?
Anonymous quote, AFC executive. Maybe he hadn't watched the guy.
No. What did he say? How did he do it? What did he say?
He, meaning Dak, will get paid as one of the best, but he's certainly not top 5 and marginal top 10. Well, I've ranked him 10th, 9th or 10th. Yeah. Great rookie season set the stage for him to hit another level that he never really was going to hit. The bar got set high, and I don't know if he can reach it. He hasn't thrown it well since 2016.
I disagree.
That's just wrong.
I disagree.
Come on.
Yeah, I disagree.
Let's just do 2018. After Amari arrived and he suddenly had a bona fide, legit number one receiver, and those are mostly home games there. So, because once Amari started going on the road last year, we lost him. But in that stretch, over the last 10 games of 2018, Dak Prescott led the NFL in completions. So he hasn't thrown it well since 2016. He's thrown the heck out of it. Led the NFL in catchable passes. 4th in yardage, 3rd in air distance, so there's no more dinking and dacking going on. He was bombs away. It was spectacular. Yet, coming off that stretch and that surge, as we went into 2019, the annual poll in the summertime before camp opened, NFL players only voting on top 100 in the NFL, Dak Prescott didn't even get voted into the top 100. So what does that tell you? This is pretty amazing. He even got voted up to 9 here among quarterbacks.
Well, I think the thing is, Skip, I disagree with what that the AFC executive or scout or whatever it was said, because I do believe Dak is a better quarterback than he was in his rookie season, although maybe the team. I think the thing is, Skip, is that back then that team was a heavily run first, a lot of play action, but they're different now. Dak is asked to do more. He's thrown the ball better. And the yardage would indicate that. The touchdowns would indicate that. But they're a different team now. They put more on his plate now. And so it's easier for us to critique him. It was hard to critique him in 2016, Skip, because he was going for 100 yards every game. And they was controlling the clock, like you said.
He literally averaged over 100 yards a game as a rookie.
And he only played 15, because remember the last game was in Philly, and he rested.
They did. Yep. Okay, so bottom line to this discussion. I believe that Dak Prescott is a more consistently accurate thrower of the football than your guy Carson Wentz is. And this does point out on ESPN that he's eclipsed 64% passing only once in 4 seasons. It's not great. And furthermore, under fire, under pressure, my guy does not flinch. Your guy goes deer in headlights occasionally and gets a little too revved up. I know he can make plays outside the pocket. They're both athletic. They're both big, strong.
Your guy is 64% because he's dinking and dacking it.
No, he's
the
not.
First three, four, sure the first three, you. The first 2 to 3 years, he was dinking and dacking. Shore fishing. That's what we call it, Skip. No deep sea. No bombs.
He's an accurate thrower of the football. Your guy is here and there.
We catch Marlin, you catch little Perch, Brim. Yeah, that's what you catch,
We caught division titles in 2016 and 2018.
Who got it now?
We caught whales.
Who the division champ now? Us.
By default.
Wear your t-shirt. No mercy.